Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified with your host, Eric Taylor, myself, Shiva Maharaj. Today, we are joined by, or is it with, Bob Henderson from Intelligence Services Group. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Yeah. Now, you and I met on an interesting place, Clubhouse. Yeah,
we did.
And you ran a couple rooms that I was privileged to join and learn. Do you want to give the public a little bit of background on yourself and your company?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate you letting me do this. Yeah, real quick, for me, my DNA comes from the law enforcement intelligence field. Started many years ago, as an 18-year-old street cop in New Jersey. And if you look at my profile, you know, I kept getting asked, how did you go from that to getting into technology and running a security company? And my story's out there, so I had to post it, but it went from there and got the attention, the media and the feds in terms of the undercover work I was doing and targeting a lot of organized gang, narcotic investigations, and took that talent and eventually ended up in Washington because of. And from there, and while I was in Washington, and you can imagine the level of work and the nature of the work we were doing there in terms of global criminal cartels and whatever. But eventually, it was all good. It was all fun. It was great work, interesting stuff. You know, people would go to movies to watch stuff that I was really doing in real life. But you didn't make any money back then. Honestly, you did back in, and I'm talking about mid-70s, early 80s. So eventually I wanted to get into technology because I thought that's where I needed to be in terms of computers, and ended up at AT&T and got promoted quickly and ran for North America, AT&T's internal network design and engineering organization. So that's where I really got involved in technology and building data centers and networks. And back then security was RACF, right? So learned about doing that, and we created a new architecture for AT&T to bring them back together once they were broke up, and it involved virtualization, didn't exist before, and we called it XNA, extended network architecture. But how do you secure an environment like that once you implement and all that? So that's where I learned technology with some of the greatest and smartest people I ever met in technology was back then at AT&T. So took that DNA from the law enforcement intelligence field, combined that with what I've done at AT&T technology, and started a company after that. Our first client was AT&T. Eventually sold that, was under non-compete for a little bit, and went back to Jersey and helped some value-added resellers expand their services business for technology. And about 7 years ago, a bunch of us got together and he said, you know, we know how to battle cybercrime and criminals on a global level. Our thought was, how do companies do that? What do they know about doing that? They're IT people. So we decided to bring that DNA to the market. And we did that about 7 years ago, created Intelligence Services Group. And we focused on originally around doing investigations, intelligence, and digital forensics, incident response, and really to help companies protect themselves and how to protect themselves and how to battle those cyber criminals. We know how to do it. We did it at the street level. We did it face-to-face to them, so we understood that. And over the years, because of the work we were doing and the nature of work with companies, we got to see gaps in their security staff. And that led to other things as we followed our business in terms of security awareness and training, endpoint detection, backup recovery, all those type of things. So that's where we are today. And we provide that suite, and that's our mission, is to really, how do we protect our clients by providing them those capabilities and at the same time going in and doing investigations, intelligence, incident response, and forensics. To manage the risk of those threats they're facing. So that's where we are.
Here's a question for you. So with you being in this landscape, providing cybersecurity services of different facets from what it seems like to your clients, what cybersecurity framework, if you will, NIST frameworks, EMMC, whatever you want to go down, what framework does your company subscribe to? And what do you recommend for your clients to adhere?
Yeah, you know, there's MITRE framework, there's NIST framework, or every client probably standardize on some of those typical common frameworks. We don't recommend those. We don't go in and recommend these frameworks. We look at what they're doing today, and what controls they have in place that's aligned with those frameworks. And we look at, okay, where are your problems? Is it the framework you didn't implement correctly? Are the controls missing to align with those frameworks? We don't recommend frameworks. We go in and work with what they have. And most of them today are MITRE, NIST, other frameworks, look at CIS controls. And so we don't go to the level, we don't do penetration testing. We stay away from that. We don't do those type of assessments on their frameworks. We're more really down and dirty in terms of solving their immediate problems and helping them protect their information. So we don't delve into recommending frameworks or anything, but the standard ones that are out there, most companies are using.
Would you say you guys are part of a proactive decision process or more of a reactive decision process by your clients? I guess, do they come to you after something goes wrong, or are you
that's a good question, because in the one side of our business, on the intelligence, you know, we're licensed out of the state of New Jersey to do intelligence investigative services as well. People don't know that. That's one of the things we do. So that could be a proactive one where, and I'll give you an example case we just completed for a global nonprofit organization we got called into because of a possible trademark infringement globally. That was costing them millions of dollars, where someone hijacked their trademark. And we got called in. Now you think, well, what does that have to do with technology? Well, it had to do with technology because they took over their web presence. They took over the actual name of the trademark of the nonprofit. They took over their website. So that was where we went in and responded to an actual immediate threat that impacted them worldwide, millions of dollars. And we, through our ability to do that investigation and forensics and gather that information, we were able to locate, identify the actors, the bad actor, and the individuals within the country. And they had some offshore accounts as well that we were able to find. So in that particular case, that was, they had an immediate threat. Others where there was a government contractor thought they were breached as a result of a security event that it impacted the government, and it kind of filtered down to subcontractors. So we got called in to, and they wanted to respond and do all these things and, you know, make public announcements. And we prevented all that because in some way you weren't really breached. There was a mistaken effort, someone with your company, and they misunderstood what was going on.
What was the misunderstanding that made them think?
There was all of a sudden they saw some 500,000 files going out or whatever. And what they didn't understand, because they had an MSP, it was a typical flood. But they didn't understand what their profile looked like. What does a typical profile look like in terms of network flows, right? Information flowing in and out. And it was standard practice that once a week, these files would be flowed out to be backed up. And they didn't even understand that. So immediately they thought there was a breach and someone was exfiltrating their files. Again, there was a huge government contractor and seven different states, and they panicked, and we were able to go in and say, no, wait a minute, that's not what happened here. So they didn't even understand their network flow and their information flow, their environment, to know that it wasn't a breach.
How were you guys able to identify that it was a breach?
Well, we went in and did the forensics, working with them and then working with the MSP, being able to go back in history and really do an analysis, a deep dive analysis on the nature of how they did do their business and what a normal looks like. We were able to go back in time and capture that, and we were able to show them that this was not the first time this happened. This is a, and then working with the MSP, we eventually found the right people within the MSP with the right knowledge that said, no, this is standard. This is what you contracted us to do. And this is how we do backups and all that. So it depends. It depends on, a lot of it's a response. It is a response to an incident. But there are times where another example would be if there is a violation of some financial wrongdoing that they think they may be a victim of, or one of their executives may have violated the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, right? They're not sure, but they think. So we would get called in independently to do something.
So in your day-to-day work, I mean, naturally, it doesn't seem like you're an MSP by any means.
No.
Are you classified as an IR firm, and is it a response firm, or what? How would you classify?
We are in some instances. Yeah, we do that. That's a lot of what we do. Do we publicize that as we're an incident response? No, because we're more. That's just one part of our mission to help protect you. We do security awareness and training. We help train and make them aware of security and help them deploy those type of capabilities within their company as well. So any capability, and we limit ourselves, right, in terms of we staying in that lane. If it's something that we can provide that makes sense to our clients that to protect their information, that's what we do.
But see, I'm going to push back on this a little bit, because you said that really rubs me the wrong way, because we are an incident response firm. You said that you provide incident response to secure a business.
Mm-hmm.
Incident response isn't part of securing a business. Incident response is because something fucking happened.
Right.
And you're bringing IR in to figure out, okay, what the hell just happened? So how are you pairing those two together? I don't understand.
Well, yeah, in the traditional sense, what you're talking about, Eric, and it's a response when something happens, right? You go in, do they have an incident response plan? You come in with playbooks, you do that. Yeah. And you're right. But there are other things that are non-technical, you know, that we get involved in that are traditional IT security related type events that happen that are threats to businesses.
Gotcha. So you're more of the proactive, you're trying to build the SOPs and things of that nature for an IR plan versus actually being the actual IR firm, correct?
Well, we do both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What type of tooling do you guys use to secure a client? I know you're a big S1, Sentinel One proponent.
Well, in terms of tools, we limit ourselves to those tool sets. Right. We have no intention of being a huge tool provider. We limit ourselves to a handful of tools that we have vetted pretty well. And in result, some of those tools, I think three of them, one of the criteria is a tool that we can use internally to manage our business. And let me give you an example. We have a unique tool set for local encryption, right? We were first approached a few years ago by a venture capitalist firm. They were bringing this tool set and this company out of the Northern Ireland to enter the U.S. market. It's called, back then it was called Salt DNA, it's Salt Communications. And they created a unique technology for mobile encryption. And we were the first company they approached to come to the United States. So that tool set and that technology for encrypting, mobile encryption and communications is unique. It's a powerful tool, but we use it internally as well. So we just don't deploy it and provide it to our clients. We use it internally, especially when we get into responding to an incident, whatever, where you want to have an off-band communications capability that's encrypted.
So we're talking about encrypted communication, or is the device itself encrypted?
Encrypted communications. So that's one example. From another example is we do a lot of forensics. So we have forensics partners, right? Tools we use as part of what we have to do. We have to have tools to do some of that work. So we use that internally. We just don't deploy and sell those forensics tools to our clients. We use them as well internally to manage and run our business. So those are examples. So we limit ourselves to the tools.
As you should, because I think the more tools you add in my opinion, are the more layers or vectors of attack you introduce.
That's right. And at some point in time, what value do we have to, you know, we're not, you know, a lot of vendors are like, well, we're agnostic. No, in some solution sets, we're not agnostic. We're very blunt about what we provide and what we recommend. We're not shy about that. And we do it for a reason, because we believe in that tool set. We believe in that technology. And you had mentioned Sentinel One, and that's one of them. And, you know, we've had other vendors. We've had other EDR partners. But I'm going to be honest, when it comes to EDR, if you could ask our opinion, we're going to tell you it's Sentinel One.
And why is that?
I'm not sure about that. We're, you know, other vendors would tell you, well, we're agnostic. Let's see. No, we just don't.
And why do you think that about Sentinel One?
Well, just their capability, the people, we know the people over there. We've known them for years, a lot of them. We know their capability, the technology, the testing they have gone through with the MITRE ingenuity results and others. And we have seen it. And, you know.
No, I like that approach, because all too often in the MSP world, which is where I come from, I guess,
right,
or our world, you have MSPs that hop around from product to product because it's the new shiny object of the day.
Right.
And most times they hop around because they have not invested the time and resources into understanding their Sentinel Ones or their OpenText or, you know, whatever the product is. And some new guy or new product comes out and like, okay, let's go get this one. And, you know, I give you guys credit for being able to hone in on and focus on your vendor partner base to really understand it, to leverage it for your clients, which, yeah, as I said, I don't see.
Yeah. We just, again, we're not shy about it. We're not going to stand up there and say we're agnostic when it comes to certain solution sets, because we're not, we're just not, we believe in it. We've done our homework, or we know the technology, we know the people, and the people is really the important part. It really is for us. So when we were approached by them, some people we knew for a long time came to us. Lynn, we get approached by vendors every day and we turn them down. We just turn them down.
Oh, I don't blame you. You know,
well, you be the MSP business, you know that. It's just, man.
Yeah. And I mean, there's something to be said here. So a lot of times MSPs or, you know, the quote unquote technologists, they will, you know, buy a tool, kind of like what Shiva said, and try to figure out how do I fix problems, or how can I, you know, leverage this tool to fix problems versus the other way around, which you're kind of hinting at, but I just want to kind of focus in on this a little bit, that you're identifying problems that both your internal person or your internal company and your clients have. And you're like, okay, what tool sets are out there to help me fix this actual problem, not the other way around. And that's really a better way to be. You just don't want to buy the new shiny thing, again, like you said, that, you know, and then try to figure out how to make it work in your marketplace. You know, there's a guy that comes on here sometimes, Brian, that we like to crap on a little bit because he does a little bit of that. But, you know, it's like, will you stop with all the layers, dude? You've got too much going on. And, you know, I think this is a much better solution, much better tactic to take, instead of, you know, let's just throw the kitchen sink at it and see what works.
Well, the problem is you throw the kitchen sink, you're introducing a whole slew of layers of vectors of attack, right? And most times you're not configuring any of these things properly. Mm-hmm. So a misconfiguration across 35 or, you know, 10 vendors could be detrimental to yourself and your client. And I know people talk about the security onion, but that doesn't really make sense if there's a straight path through all of those layers.
Especially with API integrations. There's, yeah, you know, you got all these API integrations with all these third-party vendors, and everybody wants a single pane of glass, and the single pane of glass is just crap. You know,
that's a you with it.
Yeah.
But I do have a question. I do have a question for you, Bob. And sure. I say this with peace and love. That's my Ringo Starr impersonation. But
we're good.
Coming from the MSP world, I understand how poor vendor security is. Mm-hmm. And my biggest fear these days is the RMM platform that MSPs use to manage multiple clients.
Right.
What are you seeing on your side of the world, meaning IR and proactive creation of IRPs, in terms of insurance companies and clients wanting to move away from that RMM model so that if their provider is breached, they may not be breached as easily?
Yeah, that's tough, right? Especially if you get into the SMB space, it's very difficult for those businesses to, I'm going to be honest, very difficult for them to migrate away from that model because they just don't have the skill set, they don't have the people, and they don't have the money to be able to efficiently do what they need to do to secure their environment. They just don't, and they're not going to. They're just not going to. And it's mostly around the people. It's not detrimental to people. It's just that they don't have the trained, skilled staff to be able to provide that capability. And it's tough to find those people. And so the SMB space, we don't see them migrating away from it.
You know, even in the enterprise, I'm seeing a lot of the enterprise going towards that type of RMM, multi-tenant RMM command and control systems. Yeah. Where, you know, my problem there is, okay, an SMB gets popped. Hopefully it's not going to affect national infrastructure, national resources.
Right.
Let's use Colonial as an example. You know, imagine they had an MSP or someone using a multi-tenant RMM platform.
Mm-hmm.
And that platform got compromised. And chances are, if you're doing work for Colonial, you're going to be doing work for other infrastructure-based companies that could affect the way we live.
Right.
And that's a one-to-many breach. And my concern is that a lot of these RMM platforms are operating on 35-year-old code with huge security deficits because they weren't built for today's threats. So I was just curious, are you seeing the enterprise moving away from it? Because unfortunately, I see them moving towards it.
Yeah, we don't see them moving away from it. We just, in scale, we don't. Or on individual cases, occasionally, but we just don't. And, you know, you talk about multi-tenant, right? It's interesting that one of the big requirements we keep running into with clients is that's one of the requirements they have if they want to bring EDR in. They want it to be a multi-tenant architecture.
Why would they want EDR to be multi-tenant?
Well, they have a perception in terms of the way that they can manage it and the way that they can deploy it in their environments. And we just went through this with one client. We actually had to respond with their team going against another technology, and they think it improves visibility. It's going to reduce dwell time. There's more productivity in terms of being able to have a multi-tenant architecture. So they had all these different capabilities or different requirements they thought that it would resolve, including reducing tool sprawl and all this stuff, agent sprawl, and okay. So we don't see a lot of our clients moving away from that. Keep it still.
Going back to EDR,
mm-hmm.
I like it. I think it's a fantastic product. Excuse me. I don't want to put you on the spot here. I'll tell you my experience. I'd rather put me on the spot and then you can say me too or not me. But
believe me, I don't get too flustered.
I'll tell you, I've seen time and time again, prospects come to me and they say, we want this EDR solution, whatever it is, right? And I say, okay, I don't mind selling it to you, but what are you actually going to do with this EDR solution? Are you just going to leave it there on the shelf, so to speak, on the computers? Or are you actually going to go threat hunt through these things? Or are you piping it into a SOC, not necessarily a SIM, but somewhere that the data can be used? Or is this just a checkbox exercise? I don't know. What's your experience in that realm of utilizing EDR?
Yeah, at the enterprise level, it's not that we don't experience where it's a checkbox. They have real specific needs, I think legitimate needs, where it makes sense. You get below the enterprise level, it becomes less of a exercise in requiring this versus an exercise? Well, we've read about it. We've heard about it. We see other people are doing it. So I think we need to get this. But if you really drill down, let's be honest, EDR is not the end all the be all. It just is.
No, the vendors would disagree with you. Come on.
It's AI.
Yeah.
Hey, you know my position of EDR is? Let's be honest. It's not near all the be all.
It's a tool. It's an arrow in the quiver.
And an arrow in the quiver.
If you're not going to use that arrow, what's the point of even having it, right?
Right. That's exactly right. And so, especially in the SMB space, talk clients, okay, what are you trying to accomplish by putting in EDR?
It's a good exercise.
Your tool profile today, what does it look like? Do you have a SIM? Do you have a SOAR? Do you even know what they're doing and the capabilities of them? How are you going to integrate them,
right,
to an EDR solution? You have to, especially if the EDR is eventually going to XDR, right? Do you even know what that is?
I don't think anyone knows what XDR is at this point. I just think it's a really nice three-letter acronym for something or the other.
Right.
But, you know, my concern, you know, I am concerned about the SMB because I do a lot of business there, but I also do a lot of business in that little dark hole between the SMB and the enterprise space. Mm-hmm. Let's call it the 1500 to 2000 or 2500 user environment. Right. So they're not exactly enterprise by definition, but they're definitely not SMB.
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of these companies, they just want the tools so they can check off their insurance questionnaire or whatever it is, but they're not utilizing them. And, you know, I have a hard time reconciling that because when they have to make an insurance claim, that's when the insurance company is going to start saying, hey, have you been using this?
Right.
And that's when they get denied or what have you. So,
yeah, and let's be honest, us and our partners, and whether it's 701 or SALT Communications or whether it's Encase or Forensics or Celebrite, we don't want to deploy tools that nobody's using just because they do a checkbox. There's no value in that to anybody.
Has Celebrite updated their boxes yet? So you can't sideload malware to them? You don't have to answer that. That probably goes against the partner agreement, but oh well.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said you don't have to answer that because it probably goes against a partner agreement you may not have signed.
Yeah, it was kidding. I knew what you said.
But,
nobody wants to do that. The partners don't, we don't want to do that because it just, there's no value in that to anybody.
Right.
It just creates a lot of conflict for everybody.
So what does your typical client look like?
We don't share clients' names and the trust.
Oh, of course not. I'm not.
Yeah, just put a name. Just one look like.
You know, like are you?
The one that you want. Usually, over 10,000 employees. Okay. Typical, and it's typical depending on our service, right? If you look at strictly our service side, intelligence, investigative side of the business. That's a different profile. They overlap sometimes because, and I'll give you an example where it overlaps. We continue to do intelligence as well as manage and build out global forensics platform and endpoint security platforms for a couple of global clients. But so they kind of do both for on the tool set side. In terms of deploying those global forensics and building out their SOCs for forensics and endpoint security, then on the intelligence side, they also have a need to do intelligence services to gather intelligence on specific, and I got to be careful what I say here, not employees, but that could be threats to their business on an ongoing business basis. So they've got to do both, right?
Would you say you guys are melding, you know, cyber-based intelligence and physical intelligence together in your?
Yeah, it's easy to, we do that. There's all type of intelligence, right? So we combine those depending on what outcome they're looking for and what they want to get out of it and what they hope to achieve.
We've seen a uptick in companies being incredibly or wanting to become incredibly aware in what their insider risk profiles are going to look like. Yep. Have you been seeing that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know one client of ours is, that's huge for them. It's just extremely huge for them.
I think that's the easiest way in, right? You find a way to compromise someone who has privileged access and it's game over to a certain degree, especially if you're not looking for it. You know, if there's that's no DLP, right. You know, EDR is great. Having something like a Sentinel One Vigilance is probably fantastic. But if you're not doing anything with DLP, I think that's a big glaring hole, especially for a company of the size you guys deal with, I would think.
Yeah, and you're right. And this, again, this one partner is, especially on the intelligence side, if there was an incident on the insider threat software, their brand would be destroyed. I mean, absolutely destroyed. And that's how critical it is for them.
Well, I think that's every company, right? I don't think it's...
Yeah, I think a lot of companies could get over that. This particular company, there's such a far-reaching impact, I think, for society if they're to happen.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it depends. But on a small to medium size, it's more... It's not as the lines are not as delineated as they are at the enterprise level in terms of both sides of our services, whether it's on the technology side.
What do you guys consider enterprise size wise as a company? I would guess.
Probably over 10,000 employees.
Okay. Yeah. So SMB is anything under 10?
And that could be depending on a vertical, that will be flexible. You know, you could have, depending on the vertical, a 5,000 or 2,500 person company could be an enterprise in that vertical.
Right.
So it depends. But traditionally, we look at 10,000. We go below 10,000 to us would be medium.
Okay. What do you think are the top three threats facing companies and clients, or not necessarily clients, but, you know, people you would do business
with? Yeah, and this is what gets me. It's social engineering and phishing. I mean, if you look at, especially around ransomware or threats, there are really three to four different top things that people would pay attention to. Phishing, social engineering to us is top. I mean, that is the top threat. And I don't think it's getting out there. The messages are getting out there. We talk about it a lot. But and you've been on rooms with me on Clubhouse. That's a big topic out there about social engineering and the downside of that. And
I found a couple of deep fakes on it that come in, and we can talk about this offline. People who say they are this person, but they're not. And I even went so far as to track down this person's legitimate state email address because they're a state employee for another state.
Mm-hmm.
Emailed them, sent them. I sent this person screenshot of the Clubhouse profile and said, "Hey, I don't think this is you. And this is why I don't think it's you.
Right.
You don't need to reply to me, but hey, here it is what it is." And this person actually did reply. And the way I identified it was very surprising to them. And I don't mind going offline with you and talking about that, but
yeah,
I think Clubhouse has way too many experts who may not be experts.
Yeah, if you've been on rooms, I don't say too much. I just listen because I'm always fascinated by what I hear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, to be fair to Clubhouse, you can hear anything in those rooms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. You missed a moment again. Yes. You know Tom Ryan, right?
Yeah, I do.
We have.
I wouldn't say I know him. I know him from Clubhouse.
Yeah, I run one every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. He was our guest yesterday. But, it's fascinating. You know, his background and what he does. And
pen tester, if I'm not mistaken, from his
program. That's one of them. Yeah. Yeah, there are things. But so for us, social engineering, phishing, and we talk about that a lot and how that's done, and we show them how it's done and the impact of it, patching, upgrading your apps and systems that, you know, and it used to be a lot around, you know, remote desktop protocol was being breached a lot in terms of that has slowed down some because people have gotten smarter about that, being able to patch up RDP and upgrade it, do all those things, make it more secure. So that in terms of threats and ransomware, that vector has slowed down some, I think, in the market. And so those, you know, passwords, I mean, those really are the top three. There's nothing magical here. There's not complicated in terms of where the threat vectors are. People just pay attention and get away from the shiny objects and just go back to basics.
Where do you think these companies fail when it comes to those three things? Because I know a lot of them, you know, I'm sure we all have those clients, former clients, whatever you want to call it. We've offered our advice on how to be more secure, safer, and they just ignore it.
I think it comes down to the human aspect and the mindset and the culture within these companies. And I'll give you an example. We were dealing with pharmaceutical in the Northeast, and they were trying to deploy a mindset and technology around security training and awareness and the impact of that and what that means to them, and start talking about the strategy, how to do that and what solution is best. And the executives, and I mean the top executive's answer in terms of how he would look at his staff, said, well, if somebody clicked on a phishing email, we need to fire it. Really? That's your answer?
Yeah, it's really surprising. And it was like Shiva may have had some internet connection. He said that he's dealing with all that stuff up there. So it's really interesting how a company like that would potentially just go by the wayside and be like, yeah, you know, this is our, you know, not education, not, you know, how can we potentially stop further phishing emails from coming in and, you know, making our employees more acceptable, but hey, let's just fire them, just F them, whatever.
Yeah. That was the mindset. We'll just fire them. And I, okay.
Do you see a lot of companies with that type of mindset?
We don't see a lot, but we see enough that we scratch our head. And I don't think people realize or don't put enough emphasis on the mistake of effort, right? You're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes in running a business. And now this at the speed of business that these companies have to operate at, there are going to be mistakes. I mean, they're all digitized, they're doing digital transformation, and the speed of them being able to do that has increased at least 10-fold, 20-fold because of just, that's how it is now. It's a different ecosystem. It's a different market, different environment, especially over the last 2 years. So their speed to market is primary, right? And anytime you have speed to market, there are going to be mistakes, and there are going to be mistakes of effort. Yeah. And that's what they are. And there are a lot of systems. I chat with them. A lot of them are in tune with that and they get that, but there are still some that matter. They don't have that mindset, and you have to change the mindset. You really do. Within these a lot of these companies.
How do you go about that without giving up your secret sauce? How do you get that buy-in from those with the purse strings to understand today's risk?
Well, you try to relate it to the business, the mission of the business. And let's be, businesses are there for one thing, to make money, right? They're making money. That's their business.
Finally, someone who's not trying to sell me altruism. I love that.
They're making money, right? That's their business. And they have a responsibility to their employees, to their shareholders, or if they're private, their investor, they have a responsibility, and to themselves. And they have a responsibility, I think, to the economy and the employees, that they have to make money or there is no business. So we have to keep that in mind. And when you have discussions with them, you know, say, how will this particular solution or this technology help you make money and lower the risk of doing that? How does it do that? How can we help you do that? And now I think one of the big things that we're seeing, and I'm writing a thesis paper on this, is the threat of inflation on these companies, right? And how that's going to force them, these companies, to be more productive and have increased their productivity gains in terms of their assets, making worth more and do more with what they have, because I think inflation is going to be a real risk to them managing their business. So how do you relate that risk to protecting them and why that's important and technology helping them do that. So,
I have a question for you based on that. As I'm sure you know, our relations with China are not as nice as they may have once appeared to be.
Right.
So when we're talking about a virtual Cold War there, and I hope it doesn't get to that with them, and we're no longer able to manufacture there for pennies on the dollar, that combined with inflation, is that something you're going to be addressing in your thesis? Because if it is, I mean, either way, I'd love to read it whenever you publish it, but I think that would be an interesting take.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, a lot of that, fortunately or unfortunately, is going to have to be addressed by the government. I think companies are going to have limited ability to address that China threat. They just are. Unless they have a huge footprint in China. And bigger companies do, software vendors, manufacturers, they do. But in terms of individual businesses, it's going to impact them, but they have to rely on the government for that.
But even being a big business, non-Chinese-owned business in China, no matter the size of the footprint, doesn't really mean anything because they can literally just go and shut down your factory, take it, and it's game over.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And so that's the illusion of control for some, I think.
Yeah. I agree with it.
So, alrighty, we're coming up on time and I do want to be respectful of yours.
Yep.
How do the people reach out to you and what can they reach out to you for?
Well, what I'd like to do is, I'd rather have a conversation with people and let's talk about what problems you're having. Let's talk about our unique approach to how we can help you solve those problems and address those problems. So you can always reach me on LinkedIn. You can reach us at info@iservicesgrp.com. Just reach out for us. And the other thing is we don't have any salespeople, believe it or not. We don't have a sales team.
That's good. That's good.
Let's be honest, we're all on sales. We are. But we don't have sales reps. We don't have a sales team because each one of our executives has a rich DNA, rich, deep ecosystem that we leverage. And so usually a lot of times when I call or they call, our calls get answered. And for us, we want to build those long-term relationships. I mean, we have companies that have been a customer or client for us since we started, and they're still clients. They continue to be clients. So we don't have a sales team, which people kind of snicker at, especially when you have partners wanting to sign you up as a partner, right? As a reseller or something.
Don't you like, speaking about phishing and social engineering, the level of detail you have to give a vendor partner about you, if they got breached, that would not be good for those in that database?
No, I definitely would not. They're not be. And so again, that's another unique facet of us. People just scratch their heads. Well, how do we run a business running out of a sales team? So, we do.
Conversations.
Well, I think, I'm a firm believer that my clients, they don't pay for a service. They pay for a result.
That's right.
And it sounds like that's what you guys are aligned with where.
Yeah.
I think
outcome they need to achieve, and it's our role to get them there in the most efficient, best way to achieve that outcome.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, Bob, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. I appreciate you guys having me. I hope it was worth your while.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, Lee, I get to meet you face to face.
Finally, after how many months of Clubhouse?
Yeah. And Eric, thank you so much. A pleasure meeting you.
You as well, sir. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in for yet another episode of Amplified and Intensified. We hope you've enjoyed the content. Thanks again to Bob Henderson for joining us today on our discussion. If you found this conversation useful, please refer this to somebody. Please like and comment and share this stuff so we can get the word out about what we're doing, trying to advance, cybersecurity around the board. And until next time, take care.